This is an interview with Willis Martinson, who served with the Army Air Force 78th AAF BU during World War II. This interview is being conducted at the Mount Horeb Public Library at the following address, 105 Perimeter Road, on the following date, 8/17/08, at 11 a.m. The interviewer is Jessica Williams. So let's talk about your background and circumstances before you entered the war. Where were you born? How many people were in your family? That sort of thing.
I was born in Mount Horeb on March 14, 1926. And I only have one brother. He's 6 years younger than I am. His name is Eugene. He was in the Korean conflict, so, and I got out, it wasn't too long, and then he was gone.
And what did your parents do for a living?
We were in the farm implement business, the John Deere and machinery business. Okay. So I grew up with that. My father and his brother started that in 1922, and my father bought out his brother in 1939, I think it was, and from then on we kept, my brother and I kept the business until into the 1970s. I had also been working there before I went into service. Any spare time I had, where they'd always have something for me to do at the business.
Did you do like mechanical
work? Yeah, mechanical work, okay. Cleaning old machinery up, painting and all that for delivering. Mm-hmm. I was old enough that I could deliver machinery and pick up stuff.
So then when you were called away into the service, were you basically just working at the machinery shop?
Or? Mm-hmm.
Okay. And did you say you had just graduated from high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
In June. In July, I was inducted.
Wow. Were you drafted or did you?
Yeah, I was drafted.
You were drafted, okay.
1944.
So can you tell me about that? Like, did you get a letter in the mail or how that
yeah.
happened?
I got a greeting in the mail that said I was going to be inducted into the service, and my medical, what do you say when you had to go to Milwaukee for a medical?
Physical?
Physical, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
First went to Madison to the draft, to the board there, and then we got on a bus. It was from Mount Horeb, it was me and Lowell Mulman and Dean Fink.
And they were classmates of yours?
Lowell was. Uh-huh. Dean was a year older uh-huh. than I was.
So you all got to go together then?
Yeah.
They took you to Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
and then what happened?
Then we had our physical, all in line, one after another, from one thing to another.
Mm-hmm.
One kind of funny thing was Lowell Mulman is exactly the same age I am, and was in my class all the time. And he wanted to get in the Navy so bad, and he wasn't too sharp with color blindness.
Oh.
But it didn't bother me. Uh-huh. And so we saw how they were doing it. The fellow behind the desk had a big book with the color numbers on the pages. And as we went through in front, he would point to the numbers on the number whatever, and we would say them out loud to him. And Lowell said, "Can you say them kind of loud to me, or to the guy, as we're going through?" And I said, "Sure." As I said, as long as he doesn't turn the page. Every so often he would, you know, turn to something different, and if I would be passed, he'd be done, or you know, couldn't. He'd have to do it on his own. But luckily, it was that it stayed. The book stayed the same, and I just rattled him off like that, and kind of turned my head toward Lowell, and so he could hear what I was talking about. You know, he could see him some, but not too good. And he passed it right there. He was so happy about that, and he did get in the Navy.
Well, good. That's a good story.
Yeah.
So could you request what division you wanted to go in?
No, I didn't even know I was going to go in the Air Force. I just was drafted in the Army. And after we got our the rest of our physical and our uniform and everything in Fort Sheridan, that must have been the time when they decided what branches they need to fill or something, because I was drafted. I hadn't enlisted in the Air Force. And a bunch of us were put on a troop train and headed west, and we didn't have any idea even where we were heading. We'd watch out the windows at cities, towns and cities going by, and we kept getting farther out west, and that's when they took us to Buckley Field in Colorado. At that time it was a fairly new field. Laurie Field was a permanent field that was close to it, but this was a newer establishment at that time.
Do you know if your train went through the North Platte?
I think so.
Do you remember the North Platte canteen, where the townspeople came and brought food and stuff? Did you go through that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. I just read a book about that.
In fact, I think I was a great milk drinker here. And never had any, it always was scarce with milk at like Fort Sheridan and, or wherever those places were that I was. But when I got to North Platte there, they had powdered milk, and it was, they had it mixed up and it was cold and it tasted just as good as, probably because I hadn't had any for so long, you know. But I drank milk out there when we got off the train.
Oh, yeah. That's neat. That's neat that they did that.
Yeah.
So then you said you went to Buckley Field in Colorado.
Just east of Denver, about 17 miles east.
And is that where you had your basic training? What was basic training like?
Well, the Air Force maybe wasn't quite as strenuous as the regular Army, but they did it in a shorter time, so you were pushed pretty hard.
You were
crawling under live ammunition, under live fire and everything, and you were expected to carry your full pack, and we finished up. We took a 17-mile, called it bivouac, you know, carrying your shelter half and in full gear, and stayed overnight when we got to an outlying place where they would take them, and spent the night. You used half your shelter half, and another soldier had the other half, and we put them together, and that was your tent. So,
17 miles.
Yeah.
And so after that, you graduated from basic training. How many weeks was the program, if you had to guess?
That I don't exactly know. I was After I was through with basic training, then we had to stand guard duty every so often on a rotating basis. That was kind of I don't know what you call kind of a lonely deal. It was big airstrip with all kinds of our planes lined up on it, and you would be walking up one side and the other, seeing that there was no vandalism or anything, and so
probably at nighttime.
Yeah, it was always at night.
So you did some guard duty.
Yeah.
And then what were some of your other duties while you were stationed there?
That's when the took oil. We got a lot of shots there too.
Medical shots?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember when it was all in the summertime, you know, because I left here in July, and out there it was August and September, and it was hot, and all the one day we had shots, and I had two shots in the left arm, two shots in the right arm, and a vaccination all at one stop.
You're probably sore.
But some guys, they just dropped. They just passed out. They were so, you know, kind of hyper and everything, and with the heat and everything. And there was different ones. So you, when you'd see that, that didn't make you feel so good either. The sooner you could get out of there and, you know, try to get a glass of water or something. But I went through that okay, too. The shots didn't seem to. And then some of them reacted on some of the guys, and then they would, oh, they were, had a lot of rough time. So, but I was lucky. It seemed to, my body stood it pretty good.
Wow.
Then they took us to, what would you call it, where they classify you. You know, you had a meet with some officer, and he would go through your, he reviewed that I had been working on machinery and stuff, and had went through, graduated from high school, and that, and I almost got, I was small, I only weighed about 120 pounds or so, and I was short, and I almost got put into the B-17 or B-24 in the turret gun as a gunner. Because they wanted small guys that could move around in there. And this guy said, what do you think of it? And I said, well, I've got a first cousin from Madison that's doing exactly that over in England now. And I said, he doesn't seem too happy with it. You know, it was pretty dangerous. He sat there a little while and he said, We need radio mechanics. Are you interested in something like that? And I said, yeah, it sounds like I might, you know, it would be a challenge, and I could handle it. So that's the way I got to be that. He just write her down, the next guy come in. So
if you hadn't known about your cousin, then you might not have been able to.
That could be.
Say.
He had many, flights over Germany from England, you know, and he just died not too long ago. He was a couple of years older than I was. Russell, his name was. And he said, I got, I don't know if he wrote to us or what, or if he got a, maybe he got home for a little while or something. Anyway, he said, when I first got home, he said, I couldn't even stand to have an alarm clock running around me. I was just so jittery. So,
I suppose it would put you on edge.
Yeah.
So you were assigned to be a radio mechanic, and then what did said they.
Then he said, "You'll go back to practically where you came from." He said, "The first place that we send them is Truex in Madison, Truex Field." He said, "How does that sound?" I said, "It sounds pretty good."
Yeah.
I thought, the longer this takes, maybe this war can come to an end, you know, that a guy don't have to get sent right into something real dangerous. Before they put us on a train to come back this way, I don't know if there was, you were with different guys then and stuff, because they were all, you know, different things that they were going to go into. There was a few weeks before that when they were doing some work up in the mountains west of Denver, the Army was, or the Air Force, and they were clearing someplace up there. They were clearing the timber up there. Mm-hmm. And so they sent a couple of truckloads of us guys up there to help with that. Mm-hmm. We were up, I think, 12,000 feet or something. So I wasn't used to that either, not realizing, you know, how thin the air is and mm-hmm. everything. So they told us, you know, you don't go at this stuff just like you might at home because you can't stand it. Mm-hmm. We found it out pretty soon. We did that for a few weeks, and then it was time to get on the train and troop train and come back to Madison.
Did you have any issues with guys getting lightheaded up in the mountains?
Yeah,
we
did.
Until you got mm-hmm. used to it, yeah. So you came back to Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Were you allowed to come and see your family, or did you have to stay right there?
I had to stay there for quite a little while before I got to come home.
Mm-hmm.
And after I learned the ropes in there a little better, I had an old car here in Mount Orb that I had been tuning up, and so I learned to know who to ask in there, you know, if I could bring that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was an old 1930 Chevrolet. So I had a parking place on the lot and at the field and a sticker, you know, and it was gas rationing, so I couldn't do it, you know, you couldn't do much driving if I just get back on a weekend for a day or two. Maybe every a weekend. I don't think I hardly got home here from Truex more than maybe once in a month or something like that,
mm-hmm.
even though I was that close.
Because
they kept you busy. When you weren't in the radio school, you were doing calisthenics or something out in the field, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did your family ever try to come in and see you while you were stationed?
No.
No.
No. It wouldn't have been too easy.
They probably would have gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the name of the school? Do you remember? Just the Truax Radio School. Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to say about why you were there before we move on to the next place that you were sent?
That's about all that I can say. I sure appreciated that I could be there
mm-hmm.
for another length of time. And
okay, so then once you finish the program,
mm-hmm.
then they put you on a train and shipped mm-hmm. you back out west?
No, down to Scott Field, Illinois.
Okay.
That's right near Belleville, Illinois, and just maybe 25 miles from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big permanent camp. It's still going and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there you got more training.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they put us into that AACS, Army Airways Communications.
So that was
maybe that's when we got hooked up with the 9th Air Force. That could be, you know. I suppose that was under the 9th. It just didn't follow through to the, you know, to the
78th.
Yeah. You maybe still were on the 78th, but also under the, under that. Because we had a patch on our farm of the 9th Air Force, I know. And we had an AACS with a little tower with lightning coming off it, you know. That was the radio part of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure how that.
I'm not exactly sure either. I probably did at the time understand it, but I just didn't pay that much attention to it.
So basically you were associated with the 78th and also the 9th. So at Scott Field, you had some more training. You were inducted into the AACS. Were you there for a long time?
Let's see, I went there on, like in maybe March or April from Truex, and I probably was there till for a couple months anyway. One thing that happened while I was at Scott Field, there was some people that owned the, or they were part of the family that owned the farm up here by where the school bought the land right across from the high school and right next to the middle school. That was all a farm there. And there was, let's see, her name was Evans. And it was, a lady was a sister to the people that owned, to the Thompson. She was a Thompson. And they, when we were growing up, they would come up here. They were down in St. Louis already then. They would come up, and we lived on 8th Street, and so was that farm on the other side of 8th Street. The cornfield right across the street from our house. And when their kids would be up in the summertime, my brother and I would play with them. And when they got word that I was stationed at Scott Field, they said, let's arrange some Sunday when you have some time so that we can have you for dinner down there. So that happened while I was down there. That was fun. One Sunday, I took the bus from the camp from Scott Field into St. Louis, and they picked me up in St. Louis at the railroad station or someplace, and took me out to their home, and we had a nice dinner on Sunday.
That's nice.
I also got to see a couple ball games while I was down there in St. Louis.
What's the team in St. Louis?
They used to have two teams. They used to have the Browns and what are the ones they got now?
I don't know baseball.
They had two teams and two fields, you know. So you had and we being in service, they'd let us in free. So every chance I got to go to a ball game, I would.
That sounds pretty nice.
Yeah.
So you probably had a pretty okay time while you were there.
Okay. Then I went to Shepherd Field, Wichita Falls, Texas. The field was overcrowded when we got there, so we had 11 tents, big tents, you know. Then there came a storm and blew the tents down. And it had rained for I don't know when, and it rained, just poured and blew, and the tent sticks would pop out, just like corks, you know. And our good clothes was hanging in the middle of the tents, It all went down.
You must have been stuck out in the rain then.
Yeah.
I bet that was a miserable
That
time.
was the introduction to Shepherd Field. And it was hot down there. Oh, then they really started marching us, if I remember right, there wasn't a whole lot of schooling after we got there. They were just working us all we could stand, and you could tell that we were going to go towards the Pacific, had our lighter clothes and everything. And that's when they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and ended it over there, or that's which direction I would have been going. So,
So there was there a change in plans after
yeah,
the
then they took our clothes away and said we'll be sent to Germany for occupation for troops over there.
Then they gave you warmer clothes.
Got on the train and went clear across the United States again back.
Oh, goodness. Those train rides must have been,
Yeah, there's something else.
especially because you didn't have air conditioning.
No.
And
And they
if it was
were,
cold, then
and
you didn't
steam
have.
engines, belching smoke and stuff, yet the window sills and those things, you couldn't open a window because the soot would blow right in on you. Went through a lot of states then, from Texas over to, first stop, I guess, was Greensboro, North Carolina, and weren't there very long. We're on our way to be debarked to go over on the Atlantic, so Greensboro for maybe a few weeks or so, and then to Camp Grant, New York, or New Jersey, where whichever one that's at. That's the point of debarkation where you'd get on the ship. I think we had one or two nights that we could went to New York and see New York City. Then we got on the ship.
What was that like? Your first impression of New York City?
It was quite, I don't know what you'd say from them coming from one horrible way. It's something else.
Did you see the town with some friends that you'd made in
Along the
along
way,
the
yeah.
way? So then you shipped out of New York City to Germany. Do you remember the name of the ship they had?
George Washington.
George Washington.
Big, it was President Wilson's luxury liner, and there was could it have been maybe 5,000, 6,000 guys on there? We were in bunks down below, one or the other, but it was a big ship, and they were still traveling in the zigzag pattern to avoid torpedoing. So, either war hadn't been ended too long, the one over in Germany in April, and this one, what was that, in August, the first week in August or something like that. And so they were still taking no chances, and they were weaving all the time, and
That make you feel sick.
no, I didn't get sick. We were in a storm that was pretty rough, but that big ship handled it real good. It was coming back when I was on a little victory ship, and we got in a worse storm, and that was like, when we went over then on this George Washington, shortly we were going to land at Le Havre, France. We were coming in the channel. The speakers started to blare that we'll be ho holding up. We're putting in a holding pattern out here. They've spotted a floating mine in the harbor. And our radar on our ship had picked that up. And as we got closer, we all got up there. We got a look at it. So I know what a mine looks like. It had come loose. See, they had mined the harbors, and they thought they had them all cleaned up maybe by then, but they, every once in a while, one would come loose, and they were still alive. Big old rusty thing, you know, and points on it, and so they moved us, they moved our ship out of danger, and then they called the demolition squad from one of the places over there in France, and American, and blew that thing up. So we got to see a lot just before we landed.
Oh, goodness. So a floating mine has to be detonated.
Yeah. Right?
So how would they have done that in the war? Did somebody be right there and then?
No,
take
but
off?
If they weren't, it didn't come loose. The ship could hit it and it'd blow the
and
ship
then it
up.
It would go off. So basically,
yeah.
Anything that hit
yeah,
it,
anything
would
that hit
set
those
it
points,
off.
You know, would trigger it.
Okay.
They were just like a porcupine with huge points on them. And we were a ways away when we heard the explosion, and it was quite an explosion. I don't know what they hit it with. I suppose they had some artillery or something that they just zeroed in on it and blew her up. So,
and then all the rubbish and stuff from it would just
sink, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's funny when you get talking about this stuff, then it brings up some things like that that you hadn't thought of for a while.
So how long did you have to stay out in the holding pattern before they would let you land?
Well, as soon as it was taken care of, well, then we started to move in. It took us 10 days from the time we left New York till we got in the harbor.
So then you landed and
got on.
I'm going to turn this toward you.
We got on a train then. We didn't go very far. Let's see. Yeah, it was a train, though. Or wasn't it? Because I know where we went. We went to Chateau Thierry, France. There was more tents there, big tents. And while I was there, now I'm almost thinking that we got on trucks, army trucks, right there at the harbor. Isn't that funny that that's kind of blanked out for me. I don't think Chateau Thierry is all that far from Le Havre and Paris, and the whole works is pretty close there. Mm-hmm. I know I was at Chateau Thierry, the station. That was a popular battle, you know, in World War I at Chateau Thierry.
Okay.
So there had been some some buildings, not much left, but they were still using it as a, I don't know what you'd call it, for guys like us coming over there. Then you'd have your shots checked again when you got there, and I remember I got a few more there. And we were there over Thanksgiving, because we had our Thanksgiving dinner with a mess kit, and it was raining in the tent, you know, and so you stood in line in the rain to get your food, and then went back to your tent and ate.
Yeah, Thanksgiving.
Yeah. If you wanted to take a shower, they were outside a big tank up, kind of up, you know, in a kind of enclosure underneath where different you could bunch could get in, and if I remember right, it was just cold water. Yeah, and how long were they there? About, it was from there then that we got on the train to go to our last place, to our detachment, and first we went to Frankfurt from there. That was a long train ride because they would stop so many times. Mm-hmm. It was on a French train, mm-hmm. and they'd stop, and then some of the guys would get off and goof around the train, you know, and all at once the train would take off if you weren't right there. It wasn't like here in America. They'd say all aboard and they're, you know, screw around for a while till they got going. Mm-hmm. Over in France, when they're going to go, they blow the whistle maybe once or twice like that, and that's it.
Wow. Did some of the guys miss
it? Yeah, they did. The first night, about 3, you know, and they didn't know where, really where they were going either, you know, and mm-hmm. and they missed the train, and we took off. We knew there was guys that were short, and we got out in the country in the pitch dark, and those troop trains would pull off on a siding to let another passenger or something go by, you know, and they would sit there and sit there. And then we'd get off again, you know, then we'd start out again. Well, about the second one of those stops like that, here come a train, and they stopped with these guys that had missed it, you know, before. So they got back on with us anyway. Oh, I never heard what kind of a disciplinary action they got, but we were all warned what was going to happen, that there wasn't going to be many stops, and if you see a little place, you know, a little bitty town or something there where they were selling anything, you better be sure you can make it back to the train. Mm-hmm. So, I guess after that, everybody was on. If there was any, once in a while there would be some girls come up with French bread and stuff, mm-hmm. and they wanted cigarettes, and we had some cigarettes, so we'd just trade them the cigarettes for some bread. But yeah, then we went. We were in an accident then too with the train. Before we got to Frankfurt, we were coming into the outlying switch yards. We were in a boxcar with straw on the bottom of the boxcar and a 10-gallon can of water. That's all we had. Same kind of a can as they use gasoline. And our train was pulling coming into the switch yard. I don't know who was wrong or what, but our train was kind of coming to a Y and pulling to the right, and another train was coming the other direction and going to get on to the same track we were, and the engines hit. The engine, it just missed our engine head on and come into the, hit the back of our engine and into the next car. So some of the guys got hurt. They got thrown against, everybody got thrown into the, against the wall of the car if you weren't, you know, braced yourself some way. Mm-hmm. So there was and I thought it wasn't funny or anything, but when we got out after this, everything stopped, you know, we got out the door of the box car open and got out, We were fairly close to the front of the train, and I remember I went up to towards the front of the engine, and here the engineer of our train and the other one was climbing up the ladder, lighting the headlight. It was one of them that you had to light, you know, what do you call it, with the gas, you know, those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here they were.
Or something.
They should have had the headlights lit, you know, before, mm-hmm. because it was dark as could be when they run into each other.
Goodness.
Yeah. So that was a delay. And all we had to eat on that trip was some K rations. And, you know, we were hungry and
tired,
yeah. And our water tipped over, and the water got in the straw, you know, and the mess in the car. Pretty everybody's car was like that.
So you were riding on straw in the cars?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't seats?
Yeah, there were some bales besides the regular, the other loose straw.
And that's
these were regular box cars like they had in the First World War, where you I don't know if you're familiar, but they called it a 40 and 8. Mm-hmm. They could haul 40 men or 8 horses. And there's still a club going to this day of that, a 40 and 8 club. So if you ever hear that, you'll know what it is.
Yeah.
It's those little box cars. They used them through France and Germany over there for transporting troops.
Hmm.
And I know firsthand what they're about.
Did you guys try to entertain yourselves at all during the trip, like play cards or anything?
But I never was too much of a card player. Most of them were playing poker and for money, and we weren't making that much that I couldn't afford to be losing. I even was sending home a bond every month, so a $25 bond, so there wasn't, that cost $18.75 at that time, $18. So there wasn't a whole lot left of your pay.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need a whole lot, but anyway, we get some cigarettes. You could barter with them. They were just nuts for cigarettes over there.
Mm-hmm.
So
the Army gave you cigarettes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They came and that was part of your like K rations and C rations. K rations were printer all cold. C rations were something you could heat up.
Mm-hmm.
And on that train, I learned to get a can of this Sterno or whatever. I don't know where we got a hold of it, but we lit that
mm-hmm.
and put a little can of soup of the sea ration stuff on so you could heat it, you know, it would taste a little better anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything else. So, in fact, after that wreck with the train, there was a lantern sitting out by our car, by our thing, and it was a taillight, it was red on one side and I don't know, green on the other or something. It was kept sitting there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody seemed to be paying any attention to it, so we took it in our box car and was using that for heating our our sea ration, because
uh-huh.
that was burning, you know, like the lights on.
Well,
it's
pretty resourceful then.
Yeah. So then we got to Frankfurt, and that was supposed to be our headquarters. I don't know how many days we were there, and then we got on trucks and they took us out to our detachment at Hanau.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife said I shouldn't forget to tell about out in Hanau that we had a couple ladies that did our laundry
mm-hmm.
after we were situated. You know, wanting to make a little money, they'd come around, and so that was kind of handy for us.
So Hanau was kind of your final destination.
Yeah, that was the closest city. So our address was Hanau, but we were really at another field, you know, out there.
And you mentioned earlier that that field was...
a Luftwaffe base, yeah, and it had been blown up. That was our home out there.
So you guys repaired the
base? And... yeah. In fact, when that kind of work got scarce out there and they needed help in the motor, we had a small motor pool. Mm-hmm. I volunteered because I like to do mechanical work from what I did here at Mount Orb, you know, at home at fixing things, you know, and that. And they were glad to have me, and there was another one of my buddies from New Jersey. We volunteered to go to do that because mm-hmm. there wasn't much radio work anymore to be done around there. And so we ended up working in the motor pool. We had our detachment had our own Jeeps and our own trucks and weapons carriers and stuff like that, and we had to keep them in, so they were operable all the time. Mm-hmm.
So when you were first stationed there, you did do radio work?
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of stuff did you have to do?
Oh, they had different radio equipment that was not in good condition at all that we had to repair over there. Mm-hmm. And they briefed us on how to land a plane with the scope of the radar scope or whatever that was in that truck. You drive it out on the field, and you could bring in a plane just like if you were in a tower. Mm-hmm. So it isn't. When I think of it now, wasn't very sophisticated to what they've got now, but that's what they had. And it was to be used, you know, in when there was combat and when they were shooting, bombing airstrips and stuff, you had to have contact with the pilots in the plane to bring them in. So.
Did you ever get involved in doing that, or was your job just to fix the radio?
Mostly just, I knew how to do it, to run that thing. That's why they kept, take us out and show us. And but most of our regular job was repairing. And
did you ever have to land a pilot?
Mm-hmm.
You did have to?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So you would talk him through it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very scarce that will happen, but it did.
So how long were you in Hanau?
Let's see, I believe 8 months over there. Yeah, I think it was 8 months. We left New York in November, and I come back in June.
Mm-hmm. And when your 8 months were up, were you then basically done with service, or... did you have to come back and work service
full time here? No, we were done then. We were just heading for Fort Sheridan, Illinois again. Mm-hmm. And they took us with a truck to from our detachment to Frankfurt, and there we got on a plane to Le Havre. Mm-hmm. C-47. Mm-hmm. So I rode in them. When we got to Le Havre, we were all lined up there, and I said, "Where is our ship?" And the one guy said, "Right there." So you can imagine how much different that ship looked than that George Washington.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a fishing, it was the USS St. Albans, and they made them one after another during the war. And they were made cheap and small, and In fact, one of them broke right in two out in, by San Francisco in the Pacific. They were put together, just sheet welded, just the main part of the ship. When we'd be down where we were in our bunks, the walls would be sweating, and right where the two sheets of metal were put together was just a long weld. We're on the George Washington. That was a long weld, and then a big plate over it with big rivets this big around. And this here was just like, oh. And when we got in the storm coming home, I didn't think I'd ever get home. It had come right out of the, pull the screw out of the water, and the lights would shake, and it would just quiver the whole shape. So you can easily see how one could break in two with just those welds like that. And that, I couldn't go up and eat. I'd send somebody up to bring some crackers back or something, but I'd just get up on the top and I couldn't stand it anymore. I didn't, you know, didn't throw up, but I knew I would if I would stay up there. And down the stairs, I would go down to my bunk again. I had some cans of tomato juice that I had stuck in my barracks bag, and I kept sipping on some of that. And if they bring me some crackers, some guys, that's why I lived on coming all the way. And some of the guys didn't bother them at all. They were down below the steps there in the storm and everything, and they were shooting craps with dice, you know, and playing cards.
Oh, my goodness. How long did it last for?
The storm?
Yeah.
Oh, it lasted for about, I'd say, 3 days.
Oh, gosh.
And it took 10 days for that to come home, too. Oh, I never was so glad. The people asked me, oh, you know, you and your wife ever been on a cruise? And I said, no. And I'll tell you why. I said, and there's more guys that I bet never would either, you know, that were on that.
How many guys could fit on this?
Oh, on a small ship? Seems to me it was around 1,000.
Okay.
And where the other one, it was either 5 or 7,000, something like that, on the George Washington. It was just a huge difference.
Huh.
Yeah, they made them, well, they didn't have too much trouble, but they sure scared a lot of people, I bet.
Yeah. So then you landed in New York
mm-hmm.
City?
Okay. We pulled in right behind the sister ship of the St. Albans. They had a name for that, too, something like it. See, Albans is a college, isn't it, in Washington, D.C.?
Okay.
We were on a trip once out to Washington, and there I saw the university or something, and it said, Albans, St. Albans. I thought, well, that, you know, could have got a picture of both ships, you know, and at that time, that was the farthest thing from our, you know, it showed the guys on it, you know, and the ship and everything. And us guys, we just looked at that, and I don't know how much they wanted for it, but we just said, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So then when you got off the ship, did they just kind of say, you can go home now, or did they provide
you? We went back to Camp Grant, and there they make arrangements for, got on another train, I think. I don't, yeah. Within a few weeks, you know, they never did stuff fast. In the Army, it was just, you didn't want to get excited because it wasn't going to be done tomorrow. Went back to Fort Sheridan where I started, and there took a train to Madison.
And then did somebody come pick you
yeah.
up?
Yeah.
Okay. And you were home.
Yeah.
Well, I think
so we went through it pretty much. I had a funny accident over at, when I was at Hanover that I didn't mention to you. You know, where these ladies would do our laundry. They liked, they were short of food too. So we had, they had big rabbits and small deer over there.
Mm-hmm.
And on a Sunday sometimes, there'd be about three of us guys take our carbines, which was a dumb thing to do. You know, that's a rifle that will shoot quite a ways. And we would go rabbit hunting right close to the field there, to the field. And when we get a rabbit, we'd give it to these ladies, and they'd fix it up, and they'd even fix them for us. It was quite a deal. Well, one Sunday, I think there were three of us, and it was a big valley. We went up first, and then there was a valley like this. I was on the left side of the valley. The other two guys were over there, and they scared up one of them big rabbits. And he ran down in the valley, and he turned, and he came right up towards me, and those guys kept firing at him with those rifles.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was frozen ground, and it was the farmer had plowed some up where I was, and the first bullets were so close, they were singing, you know. And the next one snapped, and I know, and they're like that, there, by your head, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I threw my rifle ahead of me and went down in the furrow. And just as I went down like that with my hand out, something hit the end of one of my fingers, and the blood just shot all over my face. And I knew I was hit with something. I don't know if it was a piece of, you know, frozen ground or a shrapnel of the bullet or something. And I kept hollering at them guys, you know, they couldn't hear and didn't realize what they were doing. And they got the rabbit, too. Gee, first cat. I'll never forget that.
When they found you, did you... Read of the riot act?
Yeah, I did. Well, they felt terrible, you know, but I was just lucky I was alive. That would have been great, you know, to be over there and get shot during something like that.
During a rabbit hunting.
Yeah. So, but it happened.
This is the end of the first interview with Willis Martinson on August 17th, 2008.